Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It must be time for the Dirtbag. Welcome. This is Glenn Andres, and here beside you now until noon, not beside me today is, or now anyway, is Jim Gilbert, caught in traffic. So he's running behind and will be here when he's here. But also beside me is Bruce Nelson from, well, I don't know, he's part of the horticultural faculty at Clackamas Community College. Welcome, Bruce.
Good morning, Glenn. It's a pleasure to be here.
Bruce probably has other functions besides faculty at CCC, but you don't on any other boards?
No,
I think I first met you part of Oregon Tilth or
that's
something
correct.
Like that.
I've done some work with Oregon Tilth and been a member for a long time. So love gardening and lucky enough to work at the horticulture department at Clackamas now.
And our first topic today has to do with something that is happening at Clackamas in August.
Late August, that's correct.
That's right. So our topic to begin with is rainwater harvesting. That's what's and other topics, I suppose.
So many of you may be new to this part of the country, and yes, we have a wonderful reputation for rainfall. But you know, if you're interested in growing vegetables and many of our fruits, we don't get any water during the growing season, normally. This was a little unusual June and July,
yeah,
but normally we don't get any rain during the growing season. And by the growing season, I'm thinking of especially June, July, August, and maybe early September. So we have to use another source of water. We don't get the rains coming down. Rainwater harvesting is one way that is used in other parts of the country, much more so than here, as a way to capture water for use for irrigation or even for domestic water use. We're really lucky. Late August, we're going to be having a workshop at Clackamas Community College on Monday, August 30th, and it's rainwater harvesting. And this is being done by the National Rainwater Collection Organization, American Rainwater Catchment Systems Association.
Wow. Probably has an acronym even, right?
Yeah, ARCSA. That's right. So they're going to be here with some of their professionals for a one-day training that's geared towards the general homeowner, how you could use rainwater harvesting, the basics, how you do it, why you do it, those sorts of things. And then for the professionals who might be interested in setting up larger systems or servicing these systems, there's a two-day professional training workshop that occurs on August 31st and September 1st. And all of these are at Clackamas Community College. And we're pretty lucky. I think they had this training down in Eugene, I think about 2 years ago. And Portland, we think Portland's ripe for this. There's a great need for knowledge. I know Claire Clock in Clackamas County has done a fair amount of work. But rain barrels are a nice start. But this is to take it to perhaps move along and hopefully bring Portland to a higher level of knowledge and more use and more demand. So I'm pretty excited about that.
So let's talk about what's possible for the homeowner. I mean, that's, you know.
So when you think about water use, and I'll use my own household as an example, we have water that we use inside the house, and we have water that we use outside of the house. And if you want to do rainwater collection, you need to think about a couple things. How much water do I use? When do I use it? How much water could I collect? Where would I store it? And how do I get it out of that storage system to where I need it? So they're pretty basic questions. And let me use the example of our household. And I should say this is not a lifelong passion for me. I first got exposed to this idea, interested in the idea, probably in 2004. And I've stumbled along, as maybe we all do in different events. So what drove it is we were building a granny flat, and we wanted to use rainwater collection for use inside the house. And that opened up my journey, and it's continuing, learning about rainwater harvesting. So for our garden, and I live on a little less than a half an acre in northeast Portland, and an important point is we have sandy, well-drained soil. Mm-hmm. And those of you in other parts of Portland, you don't have that.
I live pretty close to Bruce. We kind of in the same hood. And we're on the ridge there that was built with a lot of river cobble from the Missoula flood.
Right. Yeah.
And we can go down about 18 inches.
So
there it is.
Yeah, if you live on the west side of town, you have a more clay content in your soil, and they stay wetter a long time. But anyway, so in our garden, I was measuring, guesstimating the square footage of areas that we irrigate. And I'll say we don't irrigate our grapes. We don't irrigate our fruit trees that are established. We don't water the lawn. So we're irrigating berries, vegetables, and ornamental beds, some ornamental beds. So it's about 5,000 square feet that we need to water during the growing season. And, you know, it depends on what the rainfall is like as to how much water we use. But as an example, how much we're watering, we start watering in April. And again, well-drained soil, depends on what the rainfall is. You get young seedlings in, maybe they need to be watered, maybe not, depends on what happens. But, and I'm not saying we do all the drip irrigation with micro emitters and all those sorts of things. We do mulch heavily, but we probably use 100,000 gallons of water a year for irrigation alone.
How many cubic feet or 100 cubic feet?
5,000 square feet.
Well, of water is 100,000 gallons. Because we get charged by...
let's see. It's 748 gallons to a cubic foot. So I think it's about 100. Is it 100 units or 100? I think it's like 100 cubic feet.
Well, I know that my sewer usage, I remember that as like 7 or something
right.
like that.
That's kind of the basic.
And so how many of those would you be using in the summer then to give some perspective?
We would use 100.
Okay.
For that billing period that covers the summertime, those are high use.
Okay. So you can check your water bill and get an idea of what and follow along with Bruce here.
Right. So we use a lot of water in the summertime.
Yeah. I do too.
A lot of water. And Water Bureau gives you don't pay the sewer rate on that, but you're still paying for a lot of water.
And the rates are tiered.
Right.
The more
That's
you
right.
use, the more you pay.
That's right. That's right. Now, we love our garden. We don't want to lose our plants. And in time, I'll get better at figuring out ways to reduce the water. But I'm not a machine guy. I'm not a gadget guy. You know, I just want it to work. I'm sorry about that. I know, you know, KBOO listeners, there are a lot of gadget people and, you know,
all right, I guess
work.
I'm a gadget guy. Yeah, gadget
okay.
guy.
I just want the plants to grow well, and I want them to have enough water to do it, and I don't want to feel like I'm needlessly using a lot of water that should be used for other purposes.
Okay.
All right. So, for collection of water, currently in the city, the policy is, well, let me step back. In the state of Oregon, the law allows you to harvest water that hits a roof. You may harvest that and move it into some sort of storage area and use it for irrigation. If you wish to use it inside your house for drinking, you have to do some treatments of it. And if you wish to use it to flush your toilets, you also need to do some treatments for it. And you would check with your local entity. In Washington State, the Department of Ecology has changed the regulation. So now you are legally able to collect water that comes off of a roof and use it on the premises for a particular purpose. So that's changed. It used to be in Washington State, you could not, the state owned the water as soon as it hit the roof. It looks like Jim just came in.
Jim.
Good morning. Good to see you, Jim.
He's panting. He's sweating. You ran the last 2 miles, didn't you?
Pushed through all those cars.
He probably wishes he was drinking some good Portland Bull Run water right now.
Oh, that would be so nice.
Okay, that's
man,
good.
Oh, man, or some juice, Seaberry juice.
Okay, he's starting to get me salivating.
Welcome, Jim.
Welcome.
Have you been following along?
Yes, at least part of it until I had to park the car.
Okay, yeah, right. All right, well, so Bruce is telling us about his situation and what the current laws are in Oregon and Washington.
So in Oregon, you want to collect rainwater, you got to have roofs. You collect it off the roof. You can't collect it off the asphalt and then run it into a tank and use it for irrigation. It belongs to the state as soon as it hits the ground.
I see.
And so use your roofs. That's what you got to use. Same in Washington State. Use your roofs. That's not true in other parts of the country, but you'd have to check if you're in another part of the country what the regulations are.
Of course, that's the easiest.
Yeah.
It's already
yeah.
up above yeah. you there.
All righty. So you figure out a way to collect your water, usually coming off the roof. You have gutters. You have some sort of screens on the gutters to keep organic debris there. And then you run it down through probably another kind of screen and into a tank, either above ground or below ground, or maybe it's a 55-gallon barrel. It depends. But again, remember, I said we use 100,000 gallons of water for irrigation during the summertime. If I was to use 50-gallon barrels, I need 2,200 of the – I need a lot – no, it's 2,000 of
yeah.
those
mm-hmm,
barrels.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it depends on what your needs are. But if I had to do it over again, I would have put more tanks in our driveway and I would have had more roof space. Now, you wonder, okay, roofs, how much water do they collect? All right. I know math is a bad thing to do on the radio. So I'm going to keep it simple. 1,000-square-foot roof, 1 inch of rain, 600 gallons of water. Okay, so in Portland, we get 35 inches of rain at the airport. If you live, in Sandy, you're 60 inches or so. Oregon City is 45. You know, the coast, you're getting much, much more. But at our house, we can collect, I think it's about 22,000 gallons of water is all we can capture.
Is that at one time?
No, or that's over the whole
over the year.
So
you capture some, you use it,
yeah,
capture it again.
We only have 6,000 gallon storage capacity
only.
At our house.
Yeah.
And so we don't even consider that useful for outside irrigation. So, but I will say there are, and Jim's probably heard of these, some nurseries that are doing really large scale capture of rainwater, I think.
Yeah, we're doing a trial project, a demonstration project, really, with Claire Clock of Clackamas County Soil and Water Conservation to put in a really large tank. And we're going to collect rainwater for our nursery. We just did the quick calculations here, and it's going to be an acre foot of water that we're going to collect off several different roofs. That's 348,000 gallons of water. It's a tank 76 feet in diameter and 10 feet tall.
How big is your tank, Bruce, and it's underground?
We have two tanks underground, and they're probably 10 feet high, and I'm guessing they're probably 20 feet long,
and they're
side by side, and they're buried in the driveway.
And we'll come back to that because we've got to get that water out somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
But so Jim, how do you plan to get your water out of these tanks?
Well,
we'll pump them out.
Yeah, we'll just pump it out. We'll have a regular electric pump. But we do have part of our system is also solar, so we've got enough solar energy, it's going to be pumped, a lot of it's going to be using solar to actually run the pump. And it's pretty exciting. That's a lot of water, and of course going along with that is water conservation, which we do already quite a bit of, because all of our field plants are drip irrigated, so we use a lot less water than we used to when we used to water everything with overhead irrigation. And I strongly encourage homeowners to use drip as much as possible. It's a huge difference in the amount of water, and you put the water where the plant is, not everywhere else. So
yeah, I think that's a really good point, Jim, because in our yard, you know, you're paying, water is cheap here.
Relatively cheap.
It's going to go up in price. That's going to happen. But once you figure out how much water are you using, then you look at, okay, how can I grow quality plants and use less water? I mean, that's why spend money, put water where only weeds are going to grow and your plants are. So I know we've got a long way to go at our house, but once we have an idea what we can use, then you look at what's possible, what you can change. Now, one of the things with your collection of your rainwater, you do not want to get if you're in the urban area, the idea is typically the first flush of water coming off your roof most likely has the highest amount of pollutants from the air. And so typically they have some sort of what they call a roof wash system, where there's a way the first 10 gallons or whatever goes directly into the ground, and then the rest of the water then goes into your tanks. You also have filters to keep leaves and twigs, and certainly you want to keep rats and mice out of the tanks. So filtering a closed system, once the water, you want to keep other things out of it. Now, if you're using it for irrigation, you don't have the same safety regulations that you would have if you were going to use it for drinking.
How does the composition of the roof material figure into this? What's the latest on the asphalt shingles?
The best material is a metal roof. What I've heard is actually the amount of water. I was reading some information yesterday, you know, last minute preparation. And if you get an inch of rain falling onto an asphalt composition roof, versus an inch of rain falling onto a metal roof, you get much more water coming off that metal roof than you get off the asphalt shingle roof. And the quality is obviously much better coming off of the metal because of what's in the I'll stop there.
Well, is there a reason not to use the water coming off of composition shingles, since that's the most prevalent?
Depends on what you're going to be. I don't think so.
I mean, for irrigation,
I think it's probably fine. But if you have questions, you know, you might do a water quality check. But
what would be a possible contaminant?
Well, would you get petroleum products coming off there?
I wouldn't be surprised. But.
And you're going to get more grit coming off of those, and then that's going to require more filtering.
Maybe not drip irrigation if you've got that. Although it probably settles out pretty well.
I mean, use what you've got. If you've got asphalt composition shingles, use them. If you ever get to a roofing mode, then look at other possibilities.
Well, I'm thinking that they might cover that in this event.
I'm sure they're going to talk about the preferred materials, and that's going to include pumps, filters, roofs, those sorts of things. Yes.
Now, is this has a payback, but what is it? I mean, how many lifetimes is it measured in?
Well, let me give you the example because water is so cheap now, I don't think if you're comparing, okay, we spent $13,000 for our rainwater harvesting system. We've currently spent probably $5,000 on repairs for it and modifications. Huh. We will not get a payback on it. I don't know if we'll get a payback on it. Now, if you're living in a rural area where you have wells, and the wells are limited in their amount of water they're pumping. There's an example that Claire documented out in Oregon City. Their well was running dry. It wasn't sufficient water supply for their garden area, but it could handle their domestic use. Rainwater collection gave them an answer, and it obviously, their choice was no garden or a garden. And obviously, it was worth a great deal to them. If you are a farmer and you're in an area where water rights are all tied up, and by that I mean any water that hits the ground is already claimed by wildlife or some irrigator downstream or upstream, where are you going to get your water? So the only, and wells are expensive. So roofs are roof. It offers you a resource that otherwise you can't use at all. So it depends on where you're living, what the cost-benefit analysis will show.
And I think certainly for, like in our situation, if we have rainwater, it's right on the surface. Our pumping costs, electrical costs, are going to be a lot less. We're going to use a lot less energy pumping that water than when we have to bring it 160 feet from down below the ground.
Good point. Are any, most rainwater catchments are underground?
I think that's variable. And again, one of the list of resources that I think you'll be...
Yeah, I'll post them on the dirt bag.
So there, Claire Clock at Clackamas Soil and Water Conservation District and other folks working there have put together a good set of resources. But one presentation that Claire has available there is a... I guess it's a PowerPoint presentation. It's fairly long, 163 slides. But he shows examples of various rainwater collection systems in the Portland and also Clackamas County area. And there's a wide range of above ground and underground. We chose underground in our urban setting is because we did not want to use above ground space for tanks. Now, I've seen examples of where people landscape around them and you can make them attractive. If you look at, there's a community garden that has a Thai clay water collection thing, and that's very attractive. But they don't have to be below ground, but if space is an issue, that's a good way to get them out of the way.
Well, here's what I'm thinking I might do. We're going to change some things around at our house, and we've got a long porch that's now just a crawl space underneath there, and it won't be needed for a crawl space. Do they make bladders?
Yeah, I've seen some examples of bladder for that kind of space. They're not very high.
Yes.
And I suspect you can get them in various sizes. Actually, you know, it's wasted space currently.
Indeed.
For you.
Yeah.
So if you could store a couple thousand gallons there, just with a little change in the piping and the filters, you'd be good to go.
So, all right. Well, I think that it might be time. Jim, what time is it?
It's time for the garden stumper.
That's right. That's your cue, Kurt. Okay, yeah, I caught him off guard there. We had another song ready to go, but I thought this was a good time for our garden stumper quiz today. Within an inch, the question is, how much water, rainwater, falls in at the Portland Airport? That's what we'll have to use officially, in July and August together, combined. So how much water falls in July and August combined in Portland? Within an inch. Okay? That'll help to find out, well, let's see, how much water are we going to catch? Oh, that's right. We need to give the phone number. Boy, we do this once a month and it shows. 503-231-8187. That's it. 231-8187, if you know the answer to that. How much rainfall? July and August within an inch. Okay. I'm interested to know now how your system, how you get the water out and then to the plants.
Okay. So in our system that we have, and again, when we built it, we intended to use it for plants for a while, but we knew the tanks would go dry. probably in June or May. But we would use it as long as we could. It also is used for shower, dishwashing, drinking, radiant floor heat in a,
do,
in a house.
Do you treat all water, even the irrigated water?
We do. The way our system was set up, it all comes into the house, it's treated, and then it'll go out. If I had to do it again, I'd think about that. But, okay, so it goes into the tanks that are under the driveway, and then we have a submersible pump in the tanks, and that is drawing water from probably about 2 to 3 feet below the top of the surface of the water. You don't want to be drawing from the bottom of the tank because you're probably going to have more debris down there, and so that'll clog your filters. And so you want to draw your water from a few feet down. So then it's pumped into the house, and then because of the way we set up our system, we need to filter it with a 20-micron and a 5-micron filter, and then it goes through UV light. That makes it safe for drinking. Now, if you were doing it just for irrigation use, you're not going to have to do – you'll still want to do the filtering, especially if you're using drip emitters. The UV light, I don't think you're going to need to do that. And then it goes outside and goes through the various irrigation
– just like a just like a hose at that point.
That's correct.
I mean, water coming out of it.
That's correct, yeah.
And is it pressurized?
It is pressurized. We have, see, this is where you lose me. Yeah, it's pressurized.
Well, it has to have some.
Yeah, it has pressure. I mean, there's solenoids and there's the pump that's in the tank.
Yeah.
And yeah, because it's also being used for the shower and the toilet flushing and dishwashing and all that sort of stuff.
Is that, that's the. Is it the pump that provides the pressure then?
It's the pump that provides the pressure. Yeah.
Like anything.
So at the time this was approved by the city, I think it was permitted in 2005. They may have changed some of their requirements currently, but I realize they have actually changed their regulations. So now they actually allow you to use rainwater collection for flushing of toilets with, I think, some minimal treatments that wasn't allowed at the time we were building. So things change, and they may change from year to year. So the water, what's interesting to me is the rainwater that we collect, you can really, it tastes quite different than the Bull Run water. And actually, I think Bull Run water is great. I always describe the rainwater as having a flat taste. I think that's because I had a water fellow working on the system. He says, well, it's because it doesn't have the minerals that the Bull Run water has. I don't know. But it definitely is a – it tastes different.
Do you get lots of suds when you lather?
No, we don't. We get lots of suds when we first change the filters.
Oh.
And then eventually whatever was in the filter is flushed through and it's okay. So when we first change the filters, we probably need to run the faucets for a while. So that suds up. Now, one of the things that to me is part of the learning experience, there are not many people in this city who know how to work on these systems. Mm-hmm. It's kind of... This is great for the do-it-yourselfer, but I was not born a plumber. I don't want to be a plumber, and I'm willing to pay to have somebody make it right, and it's been really difficult finding people who know how to work on the things. If you get a system built, be sure you have as-built drawings. And then you're going to need to – there's not much demand right now for work on these sorts of systems. So it's understandable that plumbers don't know how to work on it. I'm beginning to think maybe plumbers are not the group. Maybe it's people who work on wells. I don't know.
Yeah.
So
Well, it'll be interesting to see who comes to this second training there.
I mean, Portland is a green city. Rainwater harvest – is not currently part of our green highlights here.
Yeah, in any major way. I mean,
right.
There's plenty of...
It's happening, but it's here and there, and there's a lot of work.
Maybe the answer to our garden stumper will explain maybe part of that reason why. Kurt, we have someone... Sam!
Oh.
Sam's here to tell us what the answer is. Well, we hope, anyway. What do you think there? What's the total amount of rainfall in July and August, roughly?
4 inches.
Oh, you're not even within 1 inch.
Doggone it.
Yeah.
I hope there's somebody else out there.
Well, let's hope there is somebody. Nobody else has called in yet. Okay, well...
I had a question about rainwater collection.
That's all right. Yeah, we'll go ahead and open the phone lines now, too. And
if
people have questions for Bruce, Jim, or me, go ahead. 231-8187, but... you're on, Sam.
So I got a rain barrel, and through the winter I go out every morning and dump it because it's full.
Well, why don't you use those on your plants?
Well, it's winter time.
Oh.
got no plants. And then in the summer I got this barrel full of really fetid water, so... What's the answer to that? I mean,
so you really need a lot more collection capacity,
right?
You really need a lot more. I mean, having that one barrel, it's opened up possibilities to you. You say, okay, all right, this is start. This is how I collect it, but I need more. And we don't need to use water on plants in the winter normally here, but that's when we get it. You know, I grew up in Maryland. We got rain in the summer. I mean, it was possible to grow crops there without irrigation. It would be possible to have storage capacity there because you get summer rain.
I'll be off the air.
Okay.
Well, that's the reason for our garden stumper. And Kurt's on the phone there. We might have another chance at that. But this is the reason why. We just don't get very much rain here in the summertime.
Yeah, and you can think of, I've never lived in the Southwest, but I believe though they get very little rain there, they will get some in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
And so
thunderstorms.
You will see collection systems there with huge capacity, but, you know, to capture that occasional rain when it comes. But again, they get it in the summer.
Right.
We don't. I better be quiet.
No, we've got some calls here. What, Paul, you got the answer for us?
1 inch, although I think it's less.
Well, let's see. I said within an inch. That's close enough because the total rainfall for each month is less than an inch.
Yeah.
So something like 0.7 something and 0.8 something or something like that.
Oh, I'm surprised it's that much. I have a question on this catchment system.
Okay.
I'm curious, your guests haven't talked about what kind of tanks they've been using, and I've been thinking about this for quite a while, and I was thinking about using concrete septic vaults, trying to get something that would be big enough that, you know, in the spring I could have some water that would be usable for irrigation, and I figured I'd tend to be grandiose. I'd have a windmill to pump it up to an elevated tank so I can get some pressure for irrigating. But... if you buried a concrete septic vault under the drip line of like a Western big leaf maple or something like that, or a Japanese maple or something like that, would the incursions from tree roots compromise the integrity of your tank?
Well, just burying it would.
It's the other way around. You would hurt the tree by burying the tank, but the tree's not going to hurt the tank.
Right.
Yeah.
So the tanks that we have in our driveway, Paul, are actually concrete tanks, but they have had a treatment on the inside of them to allow them to be used for drinking water.
Uh-huh.
But that was a special treatment we had to specifically ask for. The advantage of using the concrete containers are relatively inexpensive because there are other uses for them. So you have industry set up to produce those things. I think ours came from St. Helens. I think it's been a while, so I'm not absolutely sure of that. But the concrete works fine, but we wanted to get ours reinforced so we could have heavy loads driving over them in the driveway.
What's over yours? It's your driveway.
It's our driveway.
Is it cement or is it gravel?
The driveway is gravel.
Okay.
But we have had, we wanted it heavy enough, strong enough so that any trucks that drive over it, and you never know what kind of truck could drive in there, there wouldn't be a chance of it crashing to, crashing in. So I think concrete is a good way to go. Fiberglass is also used. There's water. There's clay used in Thailand.
There's water? What did you mean by that?
Excuse me. Let's see. The water bags that you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
They're rubber or plastic.
Oh, I see. Okay.
There's metal containers that are used. So it's a variety of materials and their advantages and disadvantages to each
now,
one.
Now, Paul, does that answer your question?
Yes. I was just wondering, were there originally septic tanks that he had modified?
No. These were new, and they were... And then they had to do this additional treatment on the inside of it.
Were they designed as a septic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
sure.
That was my question because I was just trying to find sources for large tanks other than 55-gallon drums. And thanks for pointing out how inadequate they are.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a good start, but just not
enough. So you said at the top of the show, 1,000 square feet, 1 inch of rain, 600 gallons?
Right. So in July and August, when we get less than, was it an inch and a half of rain total or something like that, and we use on 5,000 square feet of irrigated land, I'm going to say upwards of 100,000 gallons of water. Okay? July and August, 100,000 gallons of water needed. And we haven't had any rainfall since April. I mean, normally.
Yeah.
That's the dilemma we've got in the Northwest. Our rain stops usually in April, and our high water use time is several months later. So you've got to have big storage capacity if you want to make a dent.
All right. Well, let's take another call. Joe, you're on the Dirtbag.
Hey, would number two plastic high-density polyethylene containers, would that work okay for watering your garden or even if you had to in a pinch, running it through a filter and using it for drinking water if all hell broke loose and there was a bad earthquake and all the water mains went south? But does the number two HDPE high-density polyethylene are you still there, by the way?
Yeah, I'm
listening. Yeah.
Anyway, does that leach out any bisphenol A's or phthalates into the water?
I can't answer that question. I'm pretty sure that information is available. I just don't know the answer to that.
What kind of container were you thinking about?
Well, I've got access to get some of the 55-gallon food-grade barrels that had, like, vinegar in them, you know, red wine vinegar or something like that in them before. And so I've got access to get some of those. And then also they have these things called totes, and they make them in, like, they're like a big square plastic tank, and they're made out of the same stuff, the number two plastic, the HDPE, which is the same stuff that your 1 gallon milk jugs are made out of. And these things have, like, they're 40 inches by 40 inches by maybe 5 feet high, and some of them hold like anywhere from 275 gallons, and some of them, the larger ones, are 330 gallons, and they have like a 6-inch cap. I've seen them before. They've got like a 6-inch cap on top of them, and then like a...
They have a metal cage around them or something
Metal
like that.
Cage around them, and then a 2-inch diameter or inch and a half diameter ball valve on the bottom, so it'd be real easy to...
Right. Well, the key here is that if they're food grade, then that's fine for drinking.
Okay.
But I've actually acquired and then gave away some of these totes that had chemicals stored in them that I don't know what it was.
Yeah, yeah.
And so...
Imagine you use that for, like, flushing your toilet or something would be fine.
But I wasn't willing to use it in the garden, even after
I wouldn't use it in there.
Them hauled. So just because they're food grade is great if they're new.
Yeah. Well, these had
if you know what was in them, that's fine.
They had like high fructose corn syrup in them or something. So I guess you know they would have to make sure you don't have any residue of that. But
yeah, my bees would love it.
Yeah, but anyway, so the regular if they're food grade barrels or totes, they should be fine for putting in your garden. They're not. But the thing is, do you think they're going to leach out any bisphenol A's in there?
No. Well, I mean, the USDA has deemed it food grade, so that means you can eat it.
They've got all kinds of food grade containers that they sell to adults. But remember the big stink in the news here about 2 months ago, where the baby bottles and baby pacifiers and all this stuff.
That's true.
You know, the manufacturers are going, well, we hate to do this, but okay, we'll. You know, they reluctantly went ahead and started making baby bottles and products without the bisphenol A or the phthalates in them.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I haven't heard that as being an issue in this.
Yeah, but I'm just wondering, is there, and I don't have a computer, but do you know who would have the information to let you know whether HDPE does leach out phthalates or bisphenol A's?
Boy, I sure don't know.
Nope, no.
But I guess I could make a suggestion. One of the, and again, Glenn will have a couple of resources posted, and he'll tell you about it. But there's the American Rainwater Catchment Systems Association national group, and their website has lots of resources that I think would be useful. And the other one is the Clackamas County Soil and Water Conservation District. Those are good resources, and of course, you know, at the workshop, they will have, I think, people there who can answer those kinds of questions. But it's unfortunately, it's buyer beware sometimes, you know. I'm sorry to say that.
Yeah.
All right.
Now, one of the other options real quickly besides using what I just mentioned, and you guys said concrete, and are there any other?
Metal is also used, been used for a long time. There's clay that's used in Asia.
Okay.
Those are the things that immediately come to mind.
So the metal, you'd have to probably find some place that's that had, like, you'd probably want to use something like stainless steel or something like that, wouldn't you?
I would guess, but I'm not sure. I'm really not sure. There's a book called Rainwater Harvesting for Drylands and Beyond.
Okay.
It's written by Brad Lancaster, and he spends a fair amount of time going into the pros and cons of different materials that could be used for storage tanks.
It's called Rainwater?
Rainwater Harvesting for Dry Lands and Beyond.
For Rainwater Harvesting for Dry Land and Beyond. Okay, great. I'll try and get that book then and do a little bit of research, because I just heard somebody said one of the local, I may have this wrong, but they said one of the local craft breweries was going out of business or closing down. So
they may have big tanks.
Yeah, they might. But you know, how
somebody
you
else will snap
house,
those up.
But that'd be nice to have one of those babies. You
yeah.
know?
Okay. Well, good luck, and I think you know you can do some research. Try something out and be prepared to modify it.
Yeah, I'll try and get that book, because since I don't have a computer then. So.
Okay, good.
Great.
All right, thanks for calling.
For bye-bye.
Jim was talking about he took a hit, his olive collection, through the winter.
I've been out looking at them almost every day. My poor olives, we got down to about 6 degrees at our place. You know, that's just a little bit on the low side for olives. Sadly, some are coming back from the roots, which is very encouraging, and we're going to really be watching those varieties.
They're not grafted?
No, they're all root cuttings, basically.
Okay, so
these were plants that were 3 to 4 feet tall. The only thing I can say is that, you know, we only get a winter like that every 20 years, so.
But
you know,
we used to.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Who knows? You never know. You get two of them in a row, I suppose. But
yeah.
But I think that if I can get 20 years of olive harvest and then I have to, like, start over again, well, that's what may happen.
Yeah.
Jim, did you have any problems with the rain that we had? I mean, in the winter or the late rain? I mean, did you have any root rot issues or?
Yeah, we've had biggest problem has been with pollination and with the stone fruits, peaches, a lot of dieback, just constant wetness. It's just not something they like to have. What's really interesting is that almonds, which is something we've fairly recently started growing, we have some varieties from Ukraine, some early or late blooming ones, that, and I was just looking at them the other day. They are, so far, in my opinion, the most disease-resistant stone fruit that I've ever seen. And we have a cherry variety called Gold. It's an old one. We've had it for years. It's a big old tree. And it is the most reliable cherry. It just doesn't show any bacterial canker on it at all. And cherries are nice, golden, medium-sized fruit. So those are a few things you get when you have a winter like this, both the cold and the wet. Mm-hmm. You find out the plants that are really well-suited for our climate.
I've noticed that quite a few of the cherries that I've seen around town are small.
Yeah.
Have you noticed that?
The fruit itself?
The fruit, yeah. Yeah, that should be larger, that normally is larger, was small.
Probably the coolness,
It's been cold. Yeah, things are really slow.
It's hard to think about that, isn't it, when it gets up to close to 95 degrees, but to remember that just a few days before it was barely over 40.
Yeah.
I think 2 weeks ago I was still wearing, shall we say, warmer clothing than I would like to think I should be wearing in July.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting. Last night it was 45 at our place. So, you know, that's cool. And but that's what we expect in this time of year. And we're supposed to be 85 today. But, it's really the encouraging things. We've just had our second Saturday out at the nursery. We had currants and gooseberries and good crops of those for sampling. And we're about ready to have our second Saturday in August. August. That's July, right?
That's nice.
We're going to have figs. We've got a decent crop of figs that made it through the winter.
But do you have any of Glenn's honey raspberries? That's what we've been sampling on here today.
I don't have Glenn's honey raspberries.
Well, that's what's right in front of us here.
That's what I've been sampling. they're great.
Yeah, they're pretty tasty there.
And blackberries are coming on. And, of course, that's a wonderful, wonderful harvest for Oregon. I just can't imagine living without those great, you know, Marion berries and Logan berries and all their relatives that we get to eat here. It's an incredible treat.
One of the wonderful things living here, if you grow enough crops, you know, some of them do great every year and something else does terrible. Like the snow peas and the sugar snaps, best crop I've ever had. I don't know if we'll get tomatoes or not. Pears, not real heavy fruit set. Apples, heavy fruit set. The sour cherries, not much there. But variety, remember variety.
Yeah, that's the column that I have in the current issue of the Portland Alliance. That's exactly what I dealt with. Consider them like investments. You know, you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. And it's the same, you know. So our warm season crops may not do as well. Tomatoes, although I do have red tomato.
You have a red tomato?
I do have a red tomato, yes.
Impressive.
And the sun golds are coming on too. But, you know, but like you said, and that's exactly the point that I made. The peas, great. Beets, chard, all the greens, you know, they're doing well. So we've got a phone call from Aaron.
Hi there.
You're on the Dirtbag.
Hi. How are you?
Dandy.
I listen to you guys, however infrequently you guys seem to be there.
Yeah, that's...
I have a related question to your topic today.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on gray water? I just began about a week ago, and I'm enjoying it immensely. I'm from the California area, but I moved here to the Washington State. And we used to salvage our water in California and use it on our plants. And so I'm trying it here, and it seems to be working quite well, actually.
So what plants are you using it on?
Actually, my fruit trees. I have an apple and two fig trees. And it took a while for the figs to start up again this year because of the terrible weather we'd had. And, but now they're thriving.
And what water?
I don't use... I'm sorry?
And what water is it that you're using, and how do you get it there?
It's from my washing machine, and I use very little detergent, and I use baking soda, which is good, and hydrogen peroxide, which is even better, and plants seem to like those two things in combination, so I wash my clothes in it, knowing that the plants are going to like it ultimately. I even put it in my fir trees and my plums, so... Do you see any reason not to continue doing it?
Nope. I've been doing it for 15 years.
Yeah, and I'm,
I do the same thing, my washing machine water, because it comes out of the... It has a pump.
Yeah, exactly. So I have all these great big tubs, and now I'm really getting into it. And every morning, you know, I take all the water, and I and I, you know, water all my trees and plants, and they love it.
So
you know, it doesn't seem to be adversely affecting them in any way.
No.
I like the idea of that.
It's not very contrived. It was quite simple. I just take the hose and I direct it outside my laundry room door and put it into the tubs. And I'm even starting to recycle the rinse water for the next subsequent wash. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. That's a good thing.
The question is it legal?
It seems to be working.
Well, the state of Oregon has passed a law that says gray water can be legal, but it's up to this is from what I understand and relying on my memory, which is not a good thing to rely on anymore these days, is that the city of Portland then is working on some code for it. But,
as
soon as we have a water shortage, then they'll really get in gear, California did.
And there's several states that are really into it, like Arizona, and California, as I mentioned earlier. And I don't see anything in Washington State where I live that, would prohibit it. So I've just been doing it, and I'm sure my neighbors all think I'm nuts, but I've even started hanging up clothes on a clothesline.
Oh, no.
Gert, cut this collar off.
I know. How radical is that? Yeah,
that's
great. Enjoying it.
Yeah,
it's really great. So anyway.
Oh, you mean solar dryer.
I just wanted to mention that I've stopped using my clothes dryer, at least for the moment. Who knows this winter, when it starts raining again, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, by
well, we're not advocating anything that's not up to code.
Yeah, no,
it's
no.
Not to
I
say
I,
we don't do I'm it, but we don't advocate
I'm,
that.
Yeah, no, no, I'm not asking to advocate. I'm just mentioning that maybe you should have a topic on gray water, perhaps.
Yes, I thought of that exactly during when Bruce earlier in the show. I thought, well, we ought to do one on gray water too, because.
Oh, I didn't even hear that. I'm sorry.
No. That's because I was thinking it.
It's in his brain.
Because when we need the water. Is when we don't have the water,
right.
The rain, and we wash clothes all the time or take showers or
so. Like
yeah, and,
let me give you an example.
And now I'm starting to use it for my toilet. In other words, for flushing the toilet.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, so, and that way I'm not using clean water. And when you think about it, the county is giving us pristine water to flush down a toilet.
Yeah,
doesn't that seem odd?
Yes.
Because in Europe now, I know there are places where they have. The divided waters that you use just for your household flushing.
Well, as my Swedish grandmother had a saying, "We get too soon old and too late smart."
You're right. I'm getting older.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, guys. I really appreciate your show, and especially on your fig topics, because I love my black turkeys.
All right.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We enjoy
thanks
you out
calling.
Here in the sticks.
Oh, good.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right. So tell us... Where people can register for the events.
So this rainwater harvesting training event, if you want to register for either the one-day workshop or the two-day more in-depth workshop, you need to register at www.arcsa.org. So I'll say that again, www.arcsa.org. The Monday one-day workshop, the introductory course, I think it's $50, and the two-day professional technical workshop is $295. And those are both at Clackamas Community College.
With lunch?
I'm sure, there has to be lunch. Yeah, that's right.
Clackamas, they always have pretty good lunches.
So we're hoping we'll have good attendance there, and that's just going to up the knowledge level in our area. So
I see some entrepreneurial opportunity here in this two-day second one when you say there really isn't any people that are doing this front and center. So.
Well, I'm not finding them, and they're not advertising. I know there are people are saying they're designing systems, but... There's room for improvement.
Bruce Nelson, thank you very much for your wealth of information.
My pleasure. It's nice to be here, and thanks for doing the show.
We'll see you in the hood. Jim?
Yeah, it's good to see you again.
Glad you could make it in here. Well, Jim and I are headed off now to tape our show for August. We've got Rosemarie Nichols coming. We'll talk about her seed business, Nichols Seed Company, and container gardening.
Yes.
She's also an expert in that. We'll cover both of those topics for August.
Sounds exciting.
We'll be back live in September. Thanks for listening. Be well.
Bye-bye.